वासुदेवायाम् ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय So today we have three verses. I'll read the first two. First one doesn't have any purport. The third one we'll chant together. The canto is number 6. The chapter is number 2. And the verses are number 20, 21, and 22. Sri Shuka Uvacha. Now we do the third. We'll do the third together. Because that's the one up on the board, isn't it? Yeah. 22 is on the board? Yeah. Te evam suvenir niya larmam bhagavatam nripa tam yam mya pashan nimucha vipram rityo amuchan. Translation, Sri Shukdeva Goswami continued, My dear King, having thus perfectly judged the principles of devotional service with reasoning and arguments, the order carriers of Lord Vishnu released the Brahmin Ajamil from the bondage of the Yamadutas and saved him from imminent death. 21. Iti prajudita yam ya duta yadva yamantikam yama ragye yata sarvam achachakshur arindama. Translation, My dear Maharaj Parikshit, O subduer of all enemies, after the servants of Yamaraj had been answered by the order carriers of Lord Vishnu, they went to Yamaraj and explained to him everything that had happened. Purport, In this verse, the word pradyudita is very significant. The servants of Yamaraj are so powerful that they can never be hindered anywhere. But this time they were baffled and disappointed in their attempt to take away a man they considered sinful. Therefore, they immediately returned to Yamaraj and described to him everything that had happened. In the next chapter, Yamaraj will explain why these have happened, and he also gives them further instructions that he had not given them previously. 22. Dvija Pashat Vinayamukta Katabi Prakritim Gata Bhavande Shirasa Vishnu Kinkaran Darshana Utsavaha. Dvija Pashad Vinir Mukto Katabi Prakritim Gata Vavande Shirasa Vishnu Kinkaran Darshanotsava Dvija Pashad Vinir Mukto Gatabi Prakritim Gata Vavande Shirasa Vishnu Kinkaran Darshanotsava Vija Pashad Vinir Mukto Katabi Prakritim Gata Vavande Shirasa Vishnu Kinkaran Darshanotsavam. Ladies, please. Dvija, the Brahman Ajamil, Pashat, from the noose, Vinir Mukta, being released, Gatabi, freed from fear, Prakritim, Gatabi, freed from fear, Prakritim Gata, came to his senses. Vavande, offered his respectful obeisances. Shirasa, by bowing his head. Vishnu, of Lord Vishnu, Kinkaran, unto the servants. Darshana Utsava, very pleased by seeing them. Translation and purport by His Divine Grace, Srila Prabhupada. Having been released from the nooses of Yamaraj's servants, the Brahman Ajamil, now free from fear, came to his senses and immediately offered obeisances to the Vishnu Dutas by bowing his head at their lotus feet. He was extremely pleased by their presence, for he had seen them save his life from the hands of the servants of Yamaraj. Purport. Vaishnavas are also Vishnu Dutas, because they carry out the orders of Krishna. Lord Krishna is very eager for all the conditioned souls rotting in this material world to surrender to him and be saved from material pangs in this life and punishment in hellish conditions after death. A Vaishnava, therefore, tries to bring conditioned souls to their senses. Those who are fortunate like Ajamil are saved by the Vishnu Dutas or Vaishnavas, and thus they return back home, back to Godhead. Omagina timirandasya gananjana shalakaya chakshur unmalitam yena tasmai shri guruve namaha. I was born in the darkness of ignorance, and my spiritual master opened my eyes with the torchlight of knowledge. I offer my humble obeisances unto his lotus feet. And I pray for the blessings of all the assembled Vaishnavas to be able to say something which is useful and beneficial for all of us. Thank you very much for your prayers. So here we see at the very beginning that Ajamil has realized that the Vishnu Dutas, the servants of Lord Vishnu, have in fact saved his life by releasing him from the Yamadutas, or the servants of the Lord of Death. And many things have taken place in just this very small pastime. In the words that were exchanged between the Yamadutas and the Vishnu Dutas, as we know from the very beginning, in the very beginning, the Yamadutas were very upset that the Vishnu Dutas should interfere with their job. I mean, they had been given their instructions from Yamaraj to take the soul of and the subtle body, and they were going to drag it off to hell because Ajamil was a very sinful person, and he had sinned for many, many years. I believe it was from the age of 20 that his fall down began. Prior to that time, he had lived as a very gentle and dutiful and loving Brahmin. He respected and took care of his parents. He had a wife, and he showed proper affection to her. He read the scriptures regularly. He followed the regulative principles that a Brahmin follows or is supposed to follow. And for all purposes, he was a sterling person. As I mentioned in my previous talk, he had one fault, obviously, and that was he did not depend strongly or intensely on the Lord. He went through the various procedures that a Brahmin goes through. They're all holy, they're pious, but the dependency upon the Lord with the thought, with the idea that I am very limited, that I am weak, I can be overcome by this material energy, and that I need to take shelter, I need to take help continuously of the Supreme Lord, who is all-powerful and who, by his grace, can protect me from this material energy and from falling down. Obviously, he had not been doing this, because if he had, then when he saw this prostitute and this low-class man singing and embracing, then he would have just walked away, as any advanced soul or any person advancing on the path towards advancement would do. He would see this and he said, this has nothing to do with me. This is worthless. This will take me down. I'm not going to get involved or even allow my eyes or my ears to even hear them 1 second longer. I mean, this is the way an intelligent, spiritual, focused person would act. But he didn't, and I went into that in my last class. Obviously, the point being that when a person depends very intensely and very strongly on the Lord and begs for that mercy, not just early in the morning or just in the evening or even the middle of the day when he does his gayatri, but he does it as often as possible. As it is said, always remember Krishna and never forget Krishna. all the injunctions and the prohibitions of the scriptures are the servants of these two principles. And if we never even read the scriptures, but we remember these two principles, to always remember Krishna in a helpless, dependent way, and never forget Krishna, knowing how weak and how fallen we are and can even become more. Fallen in the sense that we don't remember Krishna constantly. If we did, then we would no longer be fallen. Srila Prabhupada said so many times in his talk to you American boys and girls, you're not scared of Maya enough. You think you're very strong, you're very powerful. America, great country, flexes its muscles, has billions and trillions of dollars, and everyone thinks that in a very confident and a very very confident in a very complacent way that everything will be all right as long as I'm studying on the spiritual path, I'm reading the scriptures, I'm chanting my rounds. What do I have to worry about? Krishna will take care of everything. But Krishna wants us to put some heart in this. Not just we do it, but we do it as not mere service, but devotional service. And not mere devotional service, but loving devotional service. Because actually that's the basis, that's the focus of the bhakti movement, that we develop pure love for the Supreme Lord. So what is love? Well, when a person is in love with Krishna, or a person is in love with anyone, if that person happens to be suffering in any manner or form, then he or she will try to relieve that suffering. That's the nature of love. Or if the person isn't suffering in any in any great way, then he tries to increase the pleasure of that person whom he loves. So the same thing with the devotee. Krishna does have some grief over the fact that zillions of his children have gone away, have turned away, and are suffering in so many different ways. And so to relieve Krishna of that kind of distress is that when we try
to awaken people to their true being, to their true nature, that they are spiritual, that they are the soul, they are not the body, and that the purpose of the soul is to connect and unite and relate to the Supreme Soul. And that when one is united and connected and related to the Supreme Soul, then what happens is that one feels the happiness that one is always searching for but never finding in the material world. One may try to find it through the five senses. Another person tries to find it through the mind, the imagination, or the memory, or different ways in which a person can find pleasure through the mind, or it may be through the intelligence by solving this problem, that problem, and another problem. And though a person may receive some immediate, some temporary satisfaction, that satisfaction is not enough to satisfy the soul. In fact, it doesn't satisfy the soul at all. All it does is satisfy the false ego, which feels, yes, now I have accomplished so much more, I am so much better, I am so much bigger, people are honoring me, people are glorifying me, people are showing me respect, therefore I'm better, I'm bigger, I'm greater. And this goes on for one's entire life, trying to accumulate, whether it's more money, it may be more prestige, it may be more glorification, it may be more cars, it may be more boats, it may be more wives, it may be anything that symbolizes to that person that somehow he is better off, he is greater, he is higher, bigger, better by having more and more and more, which is all an illusion. Because at the time of death, he can't take any of it with him. In fact, he is very, very grief-stricken. The more attached a person becomes to these material facilities or material accomplishments, the more miserable he will be at the time of death, because he has built this big, big blimp of a false ego that he is so great, so wonderful, and now he's about to be crushed into a big, big zero. Just nothing. So one should ask himself, well, if everything I'm going to accomplish, all the name and fame and glory and adoration and profit and distinction, if all that I'm going to get is going to disappear at the time of death, then what's the point of working so hard like an ass and just trying to have so much when it will all be gone? So that is the beginning of spiritual life, when a person asks such a question. So the really another question that arises, at least certainly to myself, and I'm sure to a few other devotees, is that since Yamaraj is one of the Mahajans, and a Mahajan, as we know, is one of the 12, we have 12 Mahajans, and they are the authorities of the science of Bhakti Yoga. And they know everything that there is to be known about Bhakti Yoga. They know how one should act, what one should do, the process that one should perform in order to achieve pure love of God. Because obviously these Mahajans have achieved pure love of God, and their words are recounted in these scriptures for us to read and to peruse, to study and to internalize and to learn by. So Yamaraj is a Mahajan, and we ask ourselves, well, if he's a Mahajan, and he certainly knew the value of the holy name, and he certainly knew that if any person chants the holy name at the time, holy name meaning Krishna, Narayan, Vasudeva, or so many names there are of God, he certainly knew that if a person chants the holy name at the time of death, then he is free of all his sinful reactions. And therefore he cannot be dragged off to hell. Being freed from sinful reactions, he has to be taken to a higher, a better place. Not necessarily immediate. I'm being sabotaged today. Is it? Okay, I think it's... I don't know what I was saying. I was so distracted. But anyway, the important point is... Yeah, I thank you. I do remember, yes. The point I was coming to was that... is that Yamaraj knew that a person should... Well, I was about to say that even if a person has committed many sinful activities, he is free of the sinful reactions that he had. And he may not be ready to go back home, back to Godhead, to the spiritual world, but he is certainly ready to be taken to a place whereby he can then pursue the path of further spiritual growth and development by being among sadhus, being among holy men, being among sages who will guide him and take him and help him to go ultimately to the spiritual world. And we have just such a situation here because, as we know, after the Vishnudutas leave, what happens is Ajamil, he knows exactly what he must do. He's become free of the sinful effects that he has performed. As we know, he mugged people, he stole, he swindled, he may have even killed. He did whatever he had to do to get money so that he could buy his prostitute wife whatever she wanted, whether it was bangles, whether it was new saris or new shoes or new anklets or whatever she wanted. And because he was so attached to the sexual pleasure, there was nothing he would not do to please her. This shows you that a person, when he becomes attached to any form of material pleasure, that he loses his sense of conscience. And when a person loses his sense of conscience, it means he will do anything. He will kill, he will rob, he will steal, he will burglarize, he will especially lie. He will lie right to your face in order to get whatever money he can get to be used to perpetuate his habit or his addiction. So that's why sometimes people take these drugs, ecstasy or LSD or marijuana or heroin, and they say, well, this is very spiritual. I'm having a spiritual experience, especially the LSDers. They see all these colors and all these kind of things floating around, stars and so forth. They say, this is spiritual. Well, I'm really in the higher world now. So you can tell where they're in the higher world by the fact that when they become addicted to this, they're ready to kill and to mug and to steal and to flim-flam and do anything to keep that going. And one of the earmarks or symbols or signatures of spiritual life is you feel more compassion, you feel more loving, you feel more sensitive, and you would think 100, if not 1,000,000 times before you would harm or hurt or spite or in any way injure another person. This is what spiritual life means. It means I develop sympathy. It means I develop empathy. I can put myself in the place of another person, and then what I give to that other person, I can feel. And feeling it, I will consider whether it should be given or whether it should not be given. So this is what this is a spiritual person. And, for example, Srila Prabhupada could look at a person just in a second, and he could know exactly where that person was spiritually and what exactly that person needed in terms of words, in terms of feelings, in terms of thoughts, to enable that person to get to the next step in spiritual life. And this is the greatness of a real, true, bona fide spiritual master who can see past and present and future and can know exactly what a devotee or a potential devotee or potential disciple needs. So as I was mentioning just a few moments ago, why didn't Yamaraj tell his Yamadutas, no, you leave them alone? Why didn't he give them that instruction? He knew the instruction. So I thought about this, and it occurred to me that this is a pastime. This is not just a happening, something that accidentally happened and that was it. But it's actually something if you will, notification or information of humanity in general, not for just that particular time, but for all time. And so it occurred to me that either one of two things could have happened. Maybe there were other things, but I could only think of two. And one is that either the Yogamaya potency was acting upon Yamaraj so that he would not tell his servants that particular instruction. And by them not getting the instruction, they acted in such a way that when Ajamil uttered the holy name, they didn't know they were still going to take him off to hell. And then, of course, the Vishnudutas appeared, and they were completely surprised. Who are these people interrupting our service? We have been told that we have to take, he's a sinful person. So, or another which could have been is that simply Yamaraj, he is, it's mentioned in a few purports that he is omniscient. He can look at a person and instantly know all his vices, all his virtues, and where he should go, to heaven, to hell, the spiritual world. He knows exactly what to do. So he's a very advanced soul, very venerable personality, and who can have complete and direct communication with the Supreme Lord. And it would not surprise me that either, as I said, the Yogamaya potency, which is the potency of Krishna, or Krishna directly tells him that you don't give them this instruction because I have a greater plan in mind. And the plan was is that we would all hear this wonderful narration, which gives such great benefits. In fact, I'll reiterate those benefits, because it's very important. It's at the end of the book, and this is text 47 to 48. And it's mentioned in the translation, because this very confidential historical narration has the potency to vanquish all sinful reactions, one who hears or describes it with faith and devotion is no longer doomed to hellish life, regardless of his having a material body and regardless of how sinful he may have been. Indeed, the Yamadutas who carry out the orders of Yamaraj do not approach him even to see him. After giving up his body, he returns home back to Godhead, where he is very respectfully received and worshipped. And we know that Ajamil, when he finally came back to his senses, he left his home. He went to Haridwar, which is at the foothills of the Himalayas, right near Rishikesh. And he sat down and began chanting either Hare Krishna or Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudeva. He chanted a Vishnu mantra and he continued chanting it. He wouldn't stop chanting it. He became totally purified, not just of his, he was already purified of his sinful reactions, but he then became purified of any sinful tendencies. It takes a little longer to get rid of the tendencies. So he got rid of all the tendencies, and he was so pure that when he was ready to leave this world, those four beautiful beings who had come from Vaikuntha and whom he had heard arguing with the Yamadutas, they came for him in a golden airplane, and they touched down, and they welcomed him, and he walked into the airplane. The airplane rose, and it went through the galaxy, and then went back home, back to Godhead. So he knew exactly what he had to do. That was the glory and the benefit of having the association of these great personalities, the Vishnu Dutas. They radiated. They expressed not only the words of the Supreme Lord, but the actual radiation of spirituality. He was enfolded in that radiation. He was uplifted. He was enlivened by it. And he could see where he had gone wrong and what he had to do to go right. So that was the one very important point. There's another point, a few points that I wanted to make, and that is how merciful the Supreme Lord is to any devotee. When I say any devotee, I mean anyone who has ever performed devotional service. Of course, Krishna says, as they surrender unto me, I reward them accordingly. So one who surrenders greatly, then he gets a great reward, and those who surrender only in a very small, tiny way will get a smaller reward. But Krishna never forgets the devotional service that a devotee performs. And in this particular instance, we can see that Krishna never forgot the service that Ajamil performed when he was younger. As I said, he did all of the different activities. He observed the regulative principles. He chanted the Vedic mantras that Brahmins chant. And he was a very good person. And Krishna never forgot that. And how did he repay him? In a very, very wonderful, if not momentous, way. He repaid him by, number one, even after he had committed 60 years or so of sinful activities, in spite of that fact, He inspired him from within to name his little child Narayan. It didn't happen just by accident. So he named his child Narayan, Not only that, but he caused him to become attached to his little child, Narayan. That was a very important point, because when he was about to leave his body and he was being yanked out by the Yamadutas, yanked out of his body, he started to scream and cry and yell, Narayan, 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 because Narayan was just a little boy, a little child. But the child symbolizes life, youth, growth, development. And that was his only connection or attachment with life. So he wanted to touch his child, look at his child, maybe smell the head of his child. He wanted to have some connection with that child. Little did he know that as he was crying for his child, not even trying to wipe away the sins that he had committed at that point in time, he was still completely contaminated in terms of his tendencies. He just wanted to see his child. But by chanting the name Narayan, 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 not only then, but he had been chanting it ever since the child was born. So every day, and it's mentioned by Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur at the end of the chapter, there's a very beautiful purport there by Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, that every time he chanted his son's name, Narayan, even though sinful activities were going on, but subconsciously there were sublime devotional devotional activities going on, because he continued to call out this name of the Lord. So purification was going on at the same time as impurification was going on. But purification would ultimately would win. Because by naming his son Narayan, and by Krishna helping him become attached to his son Narayan, he called out, screamed out, cried out, and what happened? The Vishnu Dutas knew that these Yama Dutas were about to take a man who is already purified of his sinful reactions, take him to the wrong place. So they intervened, and they told him they had to stop. And they explained to him that when a person, they explained to the Yamadutas that when a person chants the holy name of the Lord, it's extremely purifying. And he has no sinful reactions left. As it is mentioned, simply by chanting one holy name of of Krishna, a sinful person, simply by chanting one holy name of Krishna, a sinful person can counteract the reactions to more sins than he's able to commit. So it's the amount of spiritual potency in the holy name is incalculable. We can't even see the end of it. We can't see the beginning of it. It's infinite, and that's because it's non-different from Krishna, who also is infinite, whom we can't see the end of or the beginning, because he's everything and more. So that's the value of the holy name. The holy name, of course, alone, as Lord Chaitanya says, the holy name alone can render all benediction to living beings. And thus, as he says to Krishna, you have hundreds and millions of names like Krishna and Govinda. In these transcendental names, you have invested all your transcendental energies. There are not even hard and fast rules for chanting these names. Oh my Lord, out of kindness you enable us to easily approach you by your holy name, but I'm so unfortunate that I have no attraction for this name. So, by realizing and recognizing that we may not have an attraction, then what do we do to get an attraction? Well, you keep chanting, that's the first thing. But also, you pray, you beg, you entreat, you supplicate, you get down on your knees, you put your hands together and you say, Krishna, I don't have any real attraction for you. I'm putting on a show. I'm going through the methods. I'm doing this robotically and mechanically, but I want to put my heart in it, but I can't. I need your help. Please, you live in my heart. You are the super soul. Yet in this body there is another, transcendental enjoyer, who is the Lord, the supreme proprietor, who exists as the overseer and permitter and is known as the Supersoul. So Krishna is the Supersoul living in everyone's heart. As Krishna himself says, I'm seated in everyone's heart, and for me become remembrance, knowledge, and forgetfulness. He also says that I am directing the wanderings of all living entities who are seated as on a machine made of the material energy. So Krishna is in the heart, and the devotee cries, knowing that, taking that on faith from the spiritual master, from the Lord himself, that we pray to the Lord with all our heart, with all our soul, with all our might, with all our love. We pray to him, please help me, help me. And Krishna, like a loving mother, will give that help. Any child who cries to its mother, the mother comes running. Especially the more intense the child cries, the faster the mother runs because she wants to relieve the pain or the suffering of the child. So, therefore, but if the child just goes, well, she's not going to come running. But if the child is screaming, she'll come. And she starts looking. Maybe there's a safety pin sticking on the side. Maybe something's stuck in the throat. Maybe he's got an itch. She checks him out. Similarly, Krishna, he's faster. He's right there. And he will relieve. I have my own experience, and so many devotees I know have expressed the same thing, that when they pray hard, pray intensely, pray earnestly, sincerely, feelingly, that the Lord will, he hears, and he also reciprocates, responds, and he responds in the heart. When he responds in the heart, one feels peace, one feels inner strength, inner love, inner joy, inner freedom. What you can never get on the outside. These are all inner qualities. And no matter how bad things may be externally, the rain may be coming, the snow may be coming, the turbulence may be coming, the earthquakes come, the tornadoes come, a devotee who is fixed and firm in his devotional love for Krishna and is having some reciprocation with Krishna, he will not be affected or disturbed. He will deal with these matters. He's sorry to see so many people suffering from this. But he himself is not affected or ruffled or disturbed because he knows the material energy is always in a state of fluctuation. One day it's sunny, the next day it's raining, another day it's sunny. We can see the airports, people stuck at Heathrow Airport sleeping on the floor there for 5 days. And they were planning to have a very happy Christmas. Merry Christmas, lying on the... And you'd see them sacked out, you know, with their mouth open like this, in the depths of the moat. Some of these places don't even have cots for them. So, you know, we think that we've got airplanes, we've got motor cars and all of these things. Everything's going to make life really better, hunky-dory. And then we can see thousands of people. There were thousands and thousands of flights canceled. So that meant that people just stayed in the airport. They were just there. And some of them had to wait 4 and 5 days. That they're still not out. And it looks so, you see that, you just say, thank you, Krishna, that I'm here. I'm in New Dwarka. I'm able to see you. I'm able to associate with devotees. I'm able to have their darshan, able to have the deity's darshan. And I simply pray that I may be able to go on lovingly serving you and improving. So that's the secret. It's in probably, this is just a guess. Of this Bhagavatam, 70%, I would say, is all prayers. So prayer must be very important. Otherwise, there wouldn't be so many. And these prayers are very potent, very powerful. And they, when we pray these, what we call prescribed prayers, Krishna recognizes this. And when we pray personal prayers, Krishna also recognizes that. And he sees, just as a mother attends to her child, he sees that this devotee is trying his best to communicate with me and to get close to me. And he's being honest, he's being frank, that he doesn't have any taste. I'm going to help him. I will give him a taste. So on that note, I say, all glories to Srila Prabhupada ki jai. All glories to Lord Sri Krishna ki jai. May we all have the bigger and greater and higher taste for Krishna. Are there any questions? Yes, there's one question in the back, Prabhu. Can somebody get the microphone for Mukunda Datta? Prabhu.
Thank you very much. Very nice class.
Thank you.
Question is, in the second line, he says, Gatabhi Prakatim Gata. His fear
can
was
you
gone.
A little bit louder for me, please? Thank
in
you.
In the second line of the verse, it says, Gadabhi Prakatim Gata. His fear was gone and he resumed his nature. I was wondering if you can maybe elaborate on what you understand it to mean that he resumed his nature.
On the verse itself?
Yeah.
That's on verse 22. Can you
yeah,
read those words again that you would like me to elaborate on?
Prakatim Gata.
The second line. Okay, let me just look at it, and I will try my very best to. Which is part of the translation? Can you read the translation for me? Which that means you know Sanskrit much better than I do.
Yeah, Prabhupada translated it as he resumed his nature. And I'm just wondering what nature he resumed.
Okay. Yeah, I'm just looking at her sentence. Where it's his he renewed his, and number 22, it says he renewed his nature.
Something to that effect, yeah.
Yeah, he came to his senses and immediately offered his obeisances to the Vishnu Dutas by bowing his head at their lotus feet. He was extremely pleased by their presence, for he had seen them save his life from the hands of the servants of Yamaraj. So what is your question on this?
Just elaborate, if you can explain how you understand it, what Prabhupada means by
it. Well, I understand it in the following way, where it says, Yamaraj's, I'll go from the beginning, having been released from the nooses of Yamaraj's servants, the Brahmin Ajamil, now free from fear. Well, first he was free from fear because of the fact that he was released from those Yamadutas, and he was very, very much afraid at the beginning because, as I said in the talk, that he was about to lose everything that gave meaning and value to his life, namely the various pleasures. And second of all, he was free from fear in the sense that he knew what the goal of life was now. He knew what the purpose, and he knew what he had to do to get out of this entanglement. He came to his senses and immediately offered obeisances to the Vishnu Dutas by bowing his head at their feet. He knew that they were representatives of the Supreme Lord. He also knew that they had saved his life. And having saved his life, he therefore felt great appreciation, great veneration, and wanted to, of course, show his appreciation. And in effect, a change had truly come over him. At one point, when he was just totally contaminated, had he seen spiritual persons, he would just ignore them. He would be indifferent to them. But at this time, because this was a very traumatic experience, and these spiritual beings had saved him from the torments of hell, he of course felt great gratitude towards them, and of course he wanted to show his appreciation. The way he would have shown his appreciation is to continue to do what they had started, which is to reawaken his spiritual life. So it says he was extremely pleased by their presence, for he had seen them save his life from the hands of the servants of Yamaraj. So that's the important thing, is that his spiritual life has been renewed. And he knows that. And he knows what he once was. And he knows what he has become. And he knows what he is now. So he can see all of that. And that has given him a new focus, a new direction. And as we know from the text following, he actually leaves that place. And as I mentioned, he goes to Hardwar and continues his spiritual practices and ultimately goes back home, back to God. Does that satisfy you? Or did I? Yes. Yes, Maharaj. Maybe you can add to that.
Means that he became purified. Becoming purified, he came back to his spiritual senses, his spiritual understanding.
Yes. This is the main thing. He was now a changed person. And he was very grateful to them for that change, because the kind of suffering that he would have had was eliminated from his life. So I think we've had enough time. Thank you all very much. All glories to Srila Prabhupada.